You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 483. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. You are joining me here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. And joining us, me and you, the listener, together on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia. Hey, John.
Adam, have you ever considered going by, on the podcast, going by Adam Whitey? What do you think of Adam Whitey? Adam Whitey?
I'm still stuck on the fact that we have to join him in his basement.
It's where I am. You're joining me. That's just how it works.
You push the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again. That's what Adam says when he's in his basement.
There's non-creepy basements. Good. This one's not creepy. Not at all.
That was a pretty good impersonation, Tom. It really was.
Thanks, John.
That's Mr. Tom.
I'm not in my basement.
Giving you all the... Tom's not coming from anywhere near a basement. He's from the top of his fucking tower. Looking down.
Nope. I'm in the middle. I'm in the ground floor and in my den. I know that sounds super punk rock, right? I'm in the den, but it's got like an open wall. So if my wife decides to put dishes away or something, you will all be able to enjoy it.
That is the one benefit to my weird little recording
your
cave
dungeon
that I built for myself.
Is big shack.
I think that this room is it's technically like a basement bedroom in that it has like a closet and a. And a window in it.
Egress window, Adam. An egress window.
Yeah, but the this is when we got this house. I remember, like, we came downstairs and I walked in there and I went, "Ooh, that's where my records are going to go." And my wife is looking around. And she's like, "Why don't I get a room?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "I don't have any records, baby." I'm like, "Yeah, you have a room. You have a whole house full of rooms." Yeah, she's like, "But you just claimed that room was for records." I'm like, "Yeah, our records will go in the room." And she just said, "I hate me."
So it's like, you get to decorate the bedroom. I mean, I guarantee there's no footprint of Adam in the bedroom. There's no, you know, so she gets the bedroom. You get the basement record room. Even though I hate the idea of having records downstairs.
Women, you can't live with him and you can't live without him. Am I right, fellas?
Hey, if she wanted to come in my office and listen to, let them know the story of BYO Records,
Berkeley.
You know, she could, but I don't know what she does when I'm not here. Maybe she does.
She chooses not to. Yeah.
So are you saying you don't like storing records in the basement?
I don't like the idea of putting records on the basement. I don't like the idea of moving records anyway. If you got to move any quantity of them, it's horrible. Mm. I mean, I'll probably never move again just because of that.
I was at some trendy barbecue bar in Chicago a few years back that was in like the industrial, it felt like an industrial section of town, and you had to get in there by going through like just like, it was like unmarked pretty much, and there was like a corrugated metal door to get into it, and I'm pretty sure it's a famous place by Chicago people standards. What is it called? Green Door Chicago Speakeasy. Is that it? That kind of looks like it. Okay. This is probably it. It had, you know, just like a nice rad bar in it and like a good barbecue and all this stuff. But the one thing that the bar was doing that was super, super hip, I'm sure, like super like hipster, not hip, was that like at the bar, in between where the bottles were stacked, they had a record player, and the bartenders, I feel like, were regularly like changing records as they were pouring drinks and things like that, which I'm sure from a food service standpoint is more of a pain in the ass than it needs to be to have like this extra piece of moving equipment near you that you can't spill gin on. But on the other hand, for me as like a person at the bar, it was super fucking cool. And I feel that that's my dream, Tom. Is I want to one day when I'm in my When I'm in my 40s, I am going to waste a bunch of money. I'm going to build a ridiculous basement bar for no one but me. And it is going to have some sort of like integrated record player component to it because.
Oh, you're lying. It's going to have a tape player.
Oh, I have both. We'll do it all. Do it all. This is my real
eight track. Yeah, the whole thing.
This is my secret problem right now is that at some point I realized that oh, I'm going to be at the age soon where I'm going to build a stupid basement bar. And this got me down the road of that. Like there's places on the internet that where people do that. They talk about it and they congregate about it. And it's like a whole subculture of like home bar weirdos.
I always wanted to do that and make it like out of glass block. But here's the problem with that. A is nobody wants to come over to your house to drink at your bar. Nobody wants to go to a private bar at your house. It's just the way it is. You know, they want to go somewhere.
That's not true, Tom. Your children's friends definitely want to come
up. Yeah, there you go, John. But the reason I want to do it, Adam, is because I have so many ticket stubs because I'm from the era of ticket stubs. And I have so many ticket stubs. I'm like, oh, I'll make a nice clear glass top bar and all my ticket stubs can be in there. And then tens of people can come over and marvel at it. But really nobody will.
No, but you see, my in-laws have one, right? Like, and we use it when we're at their house and hanging out with them. And yeah. I become... Well,
there. Not coming to your house to use yours.
Well, because we don't have one, right? But like,
have
we're,
one.
We're slowly becoming like one of
you got
the,
little kids. Nobody wants to come to your house, Adam. I'm sorry. No, I hate to break it to you.
They do. We're Italian. We have the big Sunday family dinners, and I'm in rotation on that shit, right? So people come here, and I feed them by the dozens.
You well, feed them, then you got to get them boozed up. Ugh.
I just
like a lot of expense.
I feel that like the older I get, the more I don't want to be working in tech, and instead I want to be working in a shitty bar, and I'm just going to have to live out that as a fantasy in my basement.
There you go.
When my girl come home and she's like, "Give me $20 so I can go shopping," I'm like, $20? What are you going to do with $20? And she says, "It's none of your business." And I'm like, "But it's my wallet." Let me tell you, fellas.
Are you having a stroke, Josh?
I don't know. I mean, I'm all for a non sequitur. You guys know nobody loves a non sequitur more than I do, but I'm even confused.
I'm still doing Adam and Tom's women jokes that they were doing earlier about how you can't live with.
Yes,
women.
We are part of Al Bundy's Gnome Am, right? National Organization of Men Against Amazonian Mastery.
No, I thought it was.
No married with other fans?
No, ma'am. Anyways, listen, you can always visit podcast at punknews.org.
All too young.
Here's a letter that we got. Here we go. This is from Steve Wextall. Have you ever considered doing a live taping of the podcast? I went to a taping of my favorite beer podcast, and it was much funnier than I thought it would be. It was at a brew pub, so that may have influenced the fun. You should do one. Maybe have live band. Yeah, go. From Steve Wextall.
That would be excellent, but we do have a geography problem. You know, as in we're all in different places.
I mean,
I think that would be fun as long as you guys all come here.
Tom,
sit in my den.
We'd sit in your fucking bar that you don't have.
exactly. No, we'd sit in a real bar where people want to go, not the one in your basement that people don't want to go to.
Yeah, you say that until you have to sit in the bar and try to record something. And then you're like, oh, wait, this is the worst place to be because it's fucking loud and there's ambient noise. It was like the worst interview
Adam,
that
as
I ever
your,
did.
As your countryman Rush said, all the world is but a bar and we are merely drinkers, right? You hear that jingle? That's ice.
The, God, who was it? I met KJ from Chicks Dig It in a restaurant in Toronto like a handful of years ago, and we sat down to do this interview, and I thought we did like a really great interview, and I was doing it all with a micro recorder at the time. And then like I got out of the restaurant and I went to play it back to me, and it was just like
sounded like an ambient death metal side project.
Yeah, like I shudder to think what a podcast would sound like from that environment. Like I'm willing to try. I'm just like, you know, we'll just have to
I know that our friend and fellow podcaster Greg Simpson has done it, so there must be a way to do it. But I think you probably got to have halfway decent tech, which I think he does because you know he runs a recording studio out of his house and all that.
Yeah, Greg's a dick.
I don't know that we could just sit with our snowballs, you know, our snowballs and our laptops and just.
Yeah, I'm not some fucking caveman. I have a Yeti, not a snowball. So but to do a live show, I feel like I coast through life, guys, on this cushion of ignorance where the fact that no one actually pays attention to any of my shit doesn't normally impact me, but every once in a while, the light sort of shines in from the outside world and I realize that like no one cares about my shit. Right. And
I care, Adam.
Like a lot.
Not very much, but a little bit.
No, but like let's say, you know, I went and I posted something on Punk News. This hypothetically, John. Let's say I posted something on Punk News. I don't do that. But if I did, and it was just totally fucking wrong or broken, chances are I would not hear from anyone that it was wrong or broken. Or if I go premiere a band for someone, or premiere a song for a band or something, and then I go back and I look at the song later, and it's like, this has been viewed by like 17 people. And I'm like, oh, okay, like the illusion of my reach is certainly not not consummate with my actual reach. I'm worried that if we somehow found the place in the world where the people that listen to this podcast could reasonably congregate, we'd advertise the shit out of it and like be like, everyone come to this thing, and then it would be like four dudes in a bar.
We'd have to stack the deck and like have cool bands there too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'd need to. Or like everyone that comes gets $20, like a crisp $20 bill. And then
no, everyone that comes has to pay us $20.
Well, because like
how about this? Everybody who comes gets a free cassette and a flexi.
Boy, do we have those. The problem, you hear this from bands all the time, especially like I think bands that live in big cities. And I assume this isn't just a Toronto thing, but this is like an everywhere thing where all these like adults either our age or let's say, you know, within the 10 years younger than us, everyone is like busy and overworked and lazy, and even though there's all this cultural stuff they'll go to, they spend a lot of time, you know, sitting around on Facebook agreeing to go to events but not actually going to the events, and when the rubber hits the road they don't show up to them. So everyone's putting on these things, they're putting on shows. Their friends who could come to the show live in the same city, but they're not gonna, because, you know, there's some Netflix to watch or something like that. I don't want to have to face up against the horrible reality that no one cares.
All right, then. That's settled. You know, we're not doing it.
Fuck you.
We could do it on YouTube or something, but then people would look at our faces.
We did do that once for episode 100, I think it was. It might have been 200.
Yeah, it's still there. You could find it.
I vaguely remember that. I think I'm waiting up and on that, but I don't remember. I didn't before my time.
I don't know. I mean, hey, listener, if you want to fly all of us out to you know, whatever place you live, and put us up.
Australia. Let's go to Australia.
We will only stay at Super 8 or better.
Or if you don't even live in Australia, you could still fly us all out to Australia, and you could come too. We could all go to Australia, and we'll do an episode.
Yeah, but we're not going to hang out with you. I mean,
you can be there for the episode part.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Okay, I think you can buy us Foster's. It's Australian for Foster's beer. Well, that was a...
Well, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail.
Tom, we might see each other in the summer.
Yes, we might. I mean, if you're coming through town, I just can't imagine we won't see each other.
I mean, yeah. So in that case, we could record something. I mean, that seems like a really lame way to spend our time, but we could
pick some kind of random icon to represent John and just kind of set him like between us, like a Tesco V bobblehead or something.
That works.
Or maybe like a poster of Gigi Allen.
You got a dog. Your dog could be John.
I do, and she seems to need to go outside a lot.
Just like John.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. Yeah, we might be able to figure something out.
What are we doing?
Or at the very least, maybe we can get arrested and get a nice cool mug shot or something.
John, do you want to play a song and then talk about your spectacular thing, or do you want to do that first?
No, I'll play a song. Let's play a song by Chumbawamba. Why are we playing a song about Chumbawamba? You'll find out after this break. Thank you.
Tub Thumping, the only song
I get woman. Knocked down, but I get up again. You know you can't keep me down. I get knocked down. Love it.
So, John,
that fun was... fact, that CD single, a lot of people don't realize, that CD single is an homage to the Crash Records design, the circle with the stencil lettering.
Of course. Everybody knows that, John. And even more people care.
So, John, why outside of the fact that Chumbawamba are fun, are we listening to Chumbawamba right now?
Because Summer Soiree 4 is already announced, boys. It's already announced. I wanted to keep hold on to the secret for a little while, but someone else in Asbury Park announced their show on like a Tuesday, so I kind of had to announce my show to let them know that you don't have to go to Asbury Park to see Summer Soiree 4. Summer Soiree 4, one of the co-headliners, Danbert Nobegun of Chumbawamba, plus Kira Wood Kramer, doing their record release show for the brand new record. I've heard a couple of tracks, and let me tell you, it is the Chumbawamba fans' dream record. Of course, Chumbawamba has had many different eras. There was the anarcho-punk era, then there was kind of like the weirdo Frank Zappa-ish era, then the electronic music with dance music era, then the folk era. The new – what I've heard from the new Danbert record is it is prime Chumbawamba. If you like the Anarchy record, if you like the Swinging with Raymond record, if you like prime era Chumbawamba, the new Danbert record is exceptional because – Danbert is one of the main Chumbawamba guys, and he is gracing us with his presence. August 1st, Philadelphia, Creep Records, only $10. He is one of at least two, maybe three co-headliners. He's going to be doing his record release show, and it's going to be awesome. We're going to be giving away free stuff and goodie bags like we always do. We're going to be auctioning off really cool stuff to benefit St. Jude Children's Hospital, and it is going to be the event of the summer. I'm telling you, it's going to be awesome. Danbert is super excited. We've got, I mean, I haven't even like announce all the cool stuff that we're going to do. Like I said, I didn't want to announce it yet, but I kind of had to. So I'm taking somewhat of a different strategy this year. We'll see if it works out. Is I'm announcing cool stuff like once a month or something. And I will also say the other co-headliner is equally as awesome, and it's going to be awesome. And it's only $10, which is insane, insane. And it's going to be a good time.
John, should people go to this?
All right. They should buy advance tickets because this might sell out and it will be kick ass. But to get there at 7 o'clock sharp, we kick off at 7:15 and we will be done by 10. So you do not want to be late. And man, it's going to be cool. If you were at Summer Soiree 2, if you were at Summer Chimera with Danbert, then you will definitely want to go to this. Let me tell you.
John, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that your event. This is a really early announcement for your event too. So
yeah, well, I didn't want to announce it, but the Asbury Park guy announced at the Amberg show, so I'm like, well, I got to announce mine now. You know, like I wanted to announce it in like April, but what are you going to do? You know.
Oh, so you're in the biz now.
Let's talk about that. Is we're not going to say who, but Tom and Adam. I was also talking about another show last week that I actually had basically planned, and then check this. So I reached out to a well-known hip hop artist, a very well respected hip hop artist, and I reached out and said, "Yo, you want to do a show?" And he got right back. He's like, "Yeah, let's do it." And then things went wonky, man. I got an email from this guy who said he was his manager, but it was a weird thing. It's always a red flag. Whereas the email name doesn't match the name that they're using. Like email name like Bill Jones, but the name was like Mike Smith. It's like what? You know?
That's a lame rap name.
Yeah. So anyway, the
manager. Yeah.
The MC was super cool, and then his manager is like acting weird. He's asking all these questions. I'm like, yeah, here's this, here's that. And then he gets back to me about a week later. He's like, oh,
that's the game. The star's like, oh yeah, whatever.
Could be. But then he gets back to me and he says, oh, we usually work with this other promoter in Philadelphia, so we're not going to do the show. And I'm like, I've got money for you. Like, I've got money for you. Like, why are you turning down money? You know, like I believe it's relative. I mean, it's very common for an artist to use the same booking agent when they're on tour. But I think it's very uncommon for a artist to get reached out to and say he doesn't want to do it because he usually works with a different guy in that town. You know what I mean? Like it's not as if the other guy had something planned. Like, he just generally works with the other guy, you know? And so at first I was enraged, and I'm like, this dude, you know? But on the other hand, it's like the punk news shows are getting bigger, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but the punk news / John G shows are somewhat known in Philadelphia, particularly because I use the same theme for my flyer every time, and I've been criticized for that. But I actually like how the flyers always look kind of the same, you know, kind of like, you know, a lot of those SoCal punk flyers. You know,
gives it kind of a continuity.
Right, it's like a branding, exactly, continuity of branding. And so people sort of know who I am, I think. I could be wrong. So this dude learned that I was doing this show, this other promoter, and told the artist, don't do it or else I'm not going to book you in the future, which is like super lame. You know, I'm surprised they kowtowed to it. But then the other thing is punk shows are getting a little bit bigger. And I'm like, this SOB, man, the guy wants to battle. But on the other hand, it's like I hate getting pushed around. But on the other hand, it's like, do I need to battle over like there's so little meat on the bone. You know what I mean? Like, is battling over this the best use of my time? And I think maybe it's not. You know what I mean? We're not talking about thousands and thousands of dollars here. You know, we're talking about hundreds. You know, and so I don't know, man. Like as we vaguely discussed before, I had one other show that went wonky, and that was not fun. So and I was dancing with the ideas.
Well, I think this one going wonky is less chance of John G ending up getting stabbed.
Yeah. Well,
but maybe not. Who knows? But
so, I mean, I was thinking, like, you know, punk news events, they generally do pretty well. Maybe I will, you know, start, like, getting bigger and bigger. The idea is working towards, you know, a big festival or a big event, just, like, being able to do something cool and maybe make actual money off of it, like, actual money, you know? But if I have to fight through this mid-level, then maybe it's not even worth it. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, famously, booking shows and promoters – very grimy business, and I don't want to deal with the grime. You know what I mean? So I don't know. So maybe I'll
want to lower yourself to their level, John.
Right. So maybe I'll just do the punk. Maybe, you know, last year I did 7 shows, which was way more than I planned to do. Maybe I will just keep doing 1 or 2 a year, keep it small, and then just do it for fun and not have grander aspirations. I don't know.
You know, the fact of the matter is, from my perspective, I think that would have been a much riskier show under the punk news.
Financially, you mean?
Financially,
dude, that would have been fine. That show.
I just don't know that you could draw the punk crowd for that. I'm not sure. I see that certain MC who we're not naming has something new coming out though with a metal band.
Yeah, but he's got something new coming out like all the time. Like he can tell, like, albums a year.
Well, but okay. I hadn't seen his name. Maybe I just noticed it because we've been talking about it, but I hadn't exactly seen his name burning up the marquees lately. But Well, maybe you dodged a bullet, John.
Yeah, well, honestly, like, that is one thing I learned is if stuff gets wonky early on, just let it go. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to twist. You know, by contrast, Dan Burke, he reached out. Well, I shouldn't say Dan Burke is excited to do it. I'm super excited to do it. So maybe the path of least resistance is the best path. Maybe it is. Another example, Joe Jack Talcum. Man, Joe Jack is the man. He is the man. You know, and so maybe but the other hand, I don't make any money off those shows because I'm maybe too fair. You know what I mean? But, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, here's the thing, John. When you're 10 years older and wiser like I am, you'll come to the conclusion, and I only came to this conclusion the last couple of years. It's just like, I'm not going to do it unless it's fun. You know what I mean? I'm trying to only do things at this point that are fun. It's not like being a punk guy is my career at this point. You know, I just want to do things that are fun. And if it causes a lot of stress, which certain kinds of writing or writing for publications that have real tight deadlines, that kind of thing, it just causes stress. It's just like, what do I need this for? You know, for a little tiny bit of money, I'm getting myself all stressed out.
True, but I agree with you. And I, like with the punk show, if it's not fun, then why are we doing it? But the counter argument that I've been somewhat musing is like, I've got grand delusions, and this is not going to happen, but it's just a representative of what I've been fantasizing, like Melvin's Fest. 3 days, three different versions of the Melvins, and all the bands associated with the Melvins. Red Cross, Off, Jello Biafra, Big Business. You know, and like
doing. I mean, that would be sweet, but then you're talking about some real, real serious personal liability, money wise.
Well, yeah, exactly. But and the idea I was having, well, I'll build up to the hip hop guy that we're talking about. That's one level higher than the punkers I've been doing. A little bit more money, but then you actually make a little bit of money doing it. You know what I mean? And so then from there, you build up to, you know, 1,000 seater, you know, or 1,000 ticket. Then you go to 5,000 ticket, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I'll just keep.
Next thing
up.
You know, next thing you know, Johnny G's booking the Hella Mega Tour with Green Day, Fall Out Boy.
If they came to me and said, "John, do you want to book this tour?" I would certainly book that tour because of me. I'm making millions and millions and millions of dollars. You know,
Detroit hasn't sold out. I just saw the other day.
Somehow, I don't think they're losing money.
No, I don't think so.
Either. So anyway, but you know, I mean, if I got to go through the grind, then maybe I'm better off using my time elsewhere. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Anyway, Dan Burke, it's going to be awesome. We've got another co-headliner that I'm not going to announce yet, but I'm going to announce in maybe March or April, and it's going to be awesome. And I'm in talks right now to have a tri-headliner. And if that pans out, it's going to be mega awesome. It's going to be mega awesome.
You already set your ticket price, yet you keep adding headliners. John, you're a bad man.
Because I'm a terrible businessman. That's why I make money.
Between Adam selling tapes below cost and you setting your ticket price and adding more headliners, I don't think this podcast is ever going to become lucrative.
But I would agree with you. But for summer soiree, I'd rather blow it out, make it a special. Like I'm happy to be more financially astute at the other ones. But for summer soiree, I want to just make it like the best night ever. You know what I mean? And get people in the door. And just rock out, you know, because honestly, when you have a packed house or almost packed house, shows are a lot more fun for whatever reason, you know.
It's true. I do like to have strange men breathing down my neck because we're packed in so tight.
That's true.
It is one of my favorite things in life.
Have you noticed the weird difference in our levels of optimism for that things will work, right? I, on the one hand, I'm like, we're never going to do a live show because no one listens to this and we all suck, right? And John's like, I'm going to have a 3-day Melvin's festival.
Yeah. He's an ambitious young man, Adam, you know? What are you going to do?
When he gets to my age, he'll learn.
Exactly. Another year or two, whatever it is. Okay. Are we going to talk about any new stuff? I mean, I don't care.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about. There's a whole bunch.
You know,
of
I don't need to do that.
Whole bunch of festivals. We're
Melvin's Fest and what else?
Oh, we got what do we got here? So Melvin's Fest, and then we got three more. So
Chief Fest, Off, Circle Jerks, and Flag. That'll be a good one.
I for a second there, John, I thought you were going to go somewhere totally different with that. But okay.
All right. Actual news happened.
Yeah, Toby Keith, maybe.
Ooh.
He's okay. pretty popular.
Maybe Toby the Keith is playing this one. It has a really long lineup. So there is an event that has been announced. It's been announced by a company called Golden Voice, who you may know as the company behind Coachella. So I don't know if that means this is a good or bad thing, but let's just talk about the lineup. This is an event called Cruel World, the Cruel World Festival. It is happening in Los Angeles, California at the, what is it? At the grounds at Digby Health Sports Park.
Actually, I hear people kind of complaining that it's really not LA and that it's actually quite a bit out of LA. I mean, that's the beef I've been hearing.
An opinion from someone that lives in LA. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, to get from one end of LA to another end of LA could be well over an hour drive.
Tom, don't you drive like 10 hours of shows? I'm surprised to hear this tone from you.
I can, yeah. I mean, I do occasionally, but I'm just saying I hear people in L.A. bitching because I think traffic and everything else is such a monster.
Yeah, honestly, I think people in L.A. are a little too wimpy-dimpy when it comes to traffic. Like, there's traffic everywhere. There's traffic in
San Francisco. It sucks when it takes an hour to go 10 miles. I mean, it's horrible, right?
Oh, I can't hear any of you say L.A. without thinking of that fucking Letterkenny episode. So, all right, so let's talk about the lineup of this actual show, because the lineup is, I think, more interesting than the potential traffic problems that it will cause.
I'll be the judge of that.
This is a festival that is full of goth and new wave bands. I'll list off like 20 of them here, and it's probably still not mentioning all the big names. Morrissey, Bauhaus, Blondie, Devo, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Psychedelic Furs, Violent Femmes, The Church, English Beat, Public Image Limited, Gary Newman. Who else we got on here that we should make mention of?
And I heard Cars earlier in my car.
Bad
driving
Manners,
somewhere.
Christian Death. There's
Bad Manners is playing?
Bad Manners. Wow.
It's like the one ska band on all goths. And not only a ska band, they're like a silly ska band.
Well, yeah, the English Beat. The English Beat's there, right?
So, yeah, just be like serious, like mirror in the band. Where Bad Manners are like, bite up, fatty, bite up. I love Bad Manners, mind you.
I think the lineup for this thing is pretty awesome. I'm gonna be first to go on the record and say, if this is in Chicago, I would probably try to go. It's pretty killer.
It is pretty killer.
Tom, you said make an opinion as controversial as I'm gonna go first on the record and say pizza is great, guys. Let me tell you, I'm sorry what people say. But
well, I know you know that obviously Morrissey has become such a polarizing figure that it's just so predictable, guys. Just keep your Morrissey comments. I mean, it's become a cliche to rip on Morrissey, and nobody has anything original to say about it. I don't even think most people remember why they're ripping on him or really even understand they're ripping on him. They're just piling on the bandwagon. So let's get that out of the way right now.
I think
Morrissey's a douche, but I don't think he's a douche for the reason most of you douches think he is.
I think it is to the strength of this festival that you could cut out like a random four or five of the bands, at least near the top of the bill, and there would still be enough to make it a pretty cool festival. So take Morrissey for example. If you ejected Morrissey from this outright because I don't know, let's say Morrissey like
because he wanted to serve hot dogs.
Yeah, or I don't know. He pulled off his mask and it turns out that he really was
like Kang from the Halloween episode. Right?
Yeah. Yes. So whatever. So Morrissey's gone. You'd still have like a festival that's got like Bauhaus and Devo and the Psychedelic Furs on
and
it.
And Pill.
Pill, right? Like,
yeah, I can't believe how low they are. I can't believe how low on the bill PIL is, actually. I would think they would be much higher. But like Psychedelic Furs are a great band. Violent Femmes are a great band. The Church is a great band. A lot of stuff that was right in my kind of wheelhouse of like the early kind of weird that weird early alternative music before it became, you know, mainstream Stone Temple Pilots crap rock. A lot of cool stuff.
This lineup is killer. It's like really killer. Although I think tickets were like crazy expensive, weren't they?
I had no idea. You know, I'm not gonna fight the traffic.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Meanwhile, it's like I'm saying, well, if it was in Chicago, I go, meanwhile, that's a 3-hour drive, you know, but to drive an hour to go 10 miles seems worse.
So here's a question, because this is a good barometer of how much we give a shit about things that we're supposed to be mad about. And this comes off from one of the commenters on Punk News. So the Punk News commenter is commenting, and we'll leave Morrissey out of it, but we'll just talk about Golden Voice, right? So he says, here you have a company run by a man that supports openly anti-LGBTQ, pro-gun, pro-life, conservative organizations. So he's talking about the Golden Voice guy, right? And
Philip Anschutz.
Philip Anschutz. So
I'm like a Nazi.
He does.
Or German. Philip. Or just generic German. But yeah,
is there a difference, Adam?
Hey, I don't know. If you want to write letters defending the honor of the German people, you can send it to Tom at let's accept the commenter's argument that the dude that owns and runs Golden Voice is a huge shithead. Would that give you pause? Were you geographically able to go see this list of bands in a given place? Like, at what point do your personal morals or politics step in the way of your personal enjoyment on something like this?
Yeah, I mean, that is a good question, and you know, maybe this is where the line is drawn, or it is killing. Like, but that's true with every aspect of life, you know. The jeans that you buy, you know, the food that you buy, where you buy it from, who you buy it from. Do you use Amazon? Like, honestly, that permeates the entire aspect of you know, there's that argument is you can't exist outside capitalism because it permeates every facet of society. So I it's kind of a wimpy answer, but I mean, the Golden Voice guy is lame, but I think Bezos is way lamer than he is. You know, I think Steve Jobs is way lamer than he is. And so I think boycotting the show because he's lame, it sounds cool, but you're not really having any effect whatsoever. When if you did a much smaller sacrifice, if you will, in other aspects of your life, the effect would be much greater. So I'm going to retract my position and say the Golden Voice dude is lame, but I would probably still go. I don't use Amazon, and I think it's a much bigger impact because I think Amazon and Bezos is extremely lame.
I think I'm not a very good punk because there's a lot of things that like I will profess to agree with, but given the choice in this case in particular, I think between like the personal experience of being able to go witness these things and making a stand that I don't think is going to impact the world, I would go for the selfish personal experience part of it. And I'm the kind of person where like I try to justify it and say that like, oh, okay, well then if it's a really big problem that this guy exists and is somehow making money off of this, like, I don't know, I'll donate some money to a cause that is worthy or something, right? Like, I'd make that kind of rationalization about it. But you know what? Push comes to shove, I would probably go to the show. That's like a lot of things. Cause like, I agree on the one hand with John being like, yeah, like Amazon is problematic, but on the other hand, I will totally order something from Amazon if I think I'm somehow saving money on it. So yeah, I'm just a bad person. Tom, are you a bad person or are you,
you know, unfortunately we all do business with companies.
I thought Tom was saying, unfortunately, I am a bad person.
I have two issues with this sort of thinking. One is that it's virtually impossible, unless you can go live off the grid in some backwater place, to not do business with companies that you don't agree with ideologically. Now, that being said, man, don't go. Don't spend your money. Don't give it to Golden Voice. I totally respect that. But there's a few companies that I really have a beef with that I still will do business with occasionally just because I think the products are good at the end of the day. But the other thing is we don't all agree on all and every point of every, you know, this idea that every single punk follows the sort of liberal ideology line on every single thing is just ludicrous. So, you know, do what you want and I'll do what I want, but don't shame me into the way I'm spending my money, because it's just, we don't all have to be so lockstep. And that's one of the things that really irritates me about modern punk and honestly makes me wonder where my place is or if I even have a place for it, is this sort of blind political generic left-wing conformity of honestly, I think when it comes to politics, punks have just sort of decided to settle for what they consider to be the lesser of two evils. But I'm sorry, it's still evil, guys. I hope and pray that this next election cycle, that the whole party, the whole Democratic Party, does get swept in, so that in a couple of years we can be reminded that they're also poor at governing us. We need to stop settling for scraps. So anyway, there's my little political rant. And once again, I'm sure we're going to get letters. Oh, Tom must love Trump or something. No, I do not. But I also know that Bernie Sanders isn't going to save us from our sins, fellas. So anyway, spend your money how you want, but don't try to make me feel like a tool for spending it the way I want.
Yeah, make Tom feel like a tool for other reasons.
Exactly.
So we had two. I'm
so sick of this sanctimonious political bullshit that just seems to permeate punk so deeply. And I think I might have to get kicked out of punk. I might just have to get kicked out to like Rebellion Punk Fest. You know, John, you and I were joking about that. You know, like I just can't stand what these kids have made punk into anymore.
I agree with you.
In the scene is pitiful.
I agree with, you know, everything's got its benefits and its negatives, you know. Rebellion Fest is cool, but it's so old, and I hate to diss on it because it's cool, but it's a museum. It's the guys that were doing stuff 30 years ago, and they're still doing it, and it's cool. And right. I agree with you. I agree. Well, yeah.
You know, they're celebrating their 42-year-old albums and stuff, Jess.
The Philadelphia punk scene is extremely uniform. But that being said, there is exciting art in there, if not ideologically, conceptually. And so, honestly, if I got to pick, you know, everyone, well, that's a good point. But then again, on the other hand, Tom, Rebellion Fest, they all agree on the same things. It's the same either way.
I don't think that's true. I think you'll see a lot more political ideologies in the mix. But the other thing is in that same thing too, with my local scene, and I love a lot of the kids in the local scene and the older guys in the local scene too. And I can't go to a show without talking to 20 people and sharing drinks and whatever else. But the truth is the cancel culture thing has gotten so big, and I've seen friends turn on friends in 2 seconds because they violated some rule. Is that what this unity of the scene, is that what friendship's about? That as soon as our friend screws up or commits one of the unpardonable punk sins, we're going to cut them off?
But I mean, that's been true since Minor Threat. And really, Minor Threat is the band that started, inadvertently, Minor Threat is the band that started that with Straight Edge, you know, and Minor Threat themselves.
Yeah, and even looking back, most of it admit that was total BS anyway.
Yeah, the Minor Threat guys are saying, no, we definitely don't want a set of rules. But
but I'm saying most of the straight edge guys were not most of them, but a good amount of them were hypocrites about that stuff anyway.
No, but that was the thing. So if a guy had a drink, they're like, you know, Bill had a drink, he's axed out of the scene, and that's kind of where it all that all stems from. I forget what's the purpose of this conversation. I can't even remember now. Oh, cancel culture. Anyways, I hate to say.
If you want to get the Golden Voice thing, if we should give our money to them or not?
Well, listen, there's a lot of demons out there. Philip Anschultz is a prick, but there's way worse demons than him. And if you want to right the wrongs in the world, I think you can spend your energy attacking other things than Golden Voice. And like Tom says, if you don't want to go, then don't go. You know what I mean? But if someone goes, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, you know?
Sorry, that was a weird rabbit hole I put us down. There's two other festivals that we want to talk about that are...
You sneak in.
Well, who's putting them on, Adam? Anyone evil?
Yes, absolutely. So this first one is being put on by the liquor industry and the K-Rock radio station.
I'm actually going to go ahead and let you read those. You guys go on without me for a minute, because I'm going to go up to my liquor cabinet here and I'm going to pour out of the half gallon of cheap booze that I bought from Sam's Club, who was founded by a very, very evil man. True. So you guys talk without me. I'll be back in 5 minutes, 2 minutes.
It's a really big glass that he's got to fill. It's going to take
seriously. Don't stop. No, yeah.
All right. Let's talk about these other festivals here really quick. Just who's in them. So first, Punk in the Park is going on April 15th. It is happening at the Oak Canyon Park. And where is this? Is this in LA as well? Where is this? Silverado.
Adam, I'm just curious. Why are we talking about this article? I mean, I'm just curious. I'm not attacking you. I'm asking. Like, to me, this is just another generic fest that there's a million of now.
I don't know. It seemed like the lineup was pretty big. Maybe I thought this was a bigger festival than it really is, but
Let me look. Let me look here.
In any case, Punk in the Park is put on by that K-Rock radio station. Headlined by Pennywise, The Vandals, Fear, Lagwagon, The Addicts, Bouncing Souls, TSOL, Guttermouth, Pulley. So it's one of these events that is paired with a big unlimited apparently beer testing thing or beer tasting thing.
Well, there's the interesting point is that we're seeing a bigger trend of fat, epifat punk bands mixed with expensive, not expensive beer tasting, craft beer tasting. I think that is interesting that we're seeing this trend. And I think Fat Mike was the guy that kind of started that, isn't he?
Perhaps. Like, I mean, I definitely get where, like, you want to skate where the puck is going. And if you're, if your people, if the people that were listening to your bands when it was the mid 90s and, you know, they were all 14 or 16 years old, well, they're all in their mid 30s now and drinking fancy beer. Like if you want to keep playing to those people, it is not a stupid business decision to go put those two things together. So
I gotta say, like the same type of art is used on all these posters. I hate this art, this style. I hate it. That
it is. Sounds like Tom is returning from his wind tunnel that he lives in. Tom has to exit and enter the podcast recording area in his house by going through a large bladder, an air-filled rubber balloon. It's a very, very creepy experience, but for certain of our listeners, I'm sure a very erotic experience. So, Tom, have you returned?
I have. I hope you weren't talking about me and my
bladder. No, I wasn't talking about the weird sex bubble that you record in. All right, so that was the Punk in the Park Festival. The other one that I wanted to make mention of was Pooza. Pooza has announced the full lineup.
Punk of the Park Festival lineup, very disappointing. I didn't get my.
Didn't get
you. Uninspired.
Don't you think I can't stand watching a 25-year-old band headline over a 40-year-old band. It irritates the hell out of me.
I agree. A lot of people are that way when I'm going to sidetrack us, boys. Sorry about that.
There we go. Boy, see, I come back for 1 minute and I'm already sidetracking us.
Listen, man, I've been on record. Punk Rock Bowl in 2019 was one of the funnest week or 4 or 5 days I've ever had. It was amazing. I mean, it was just John Central, kick-ass band, it's a kick-ass band. This year, boys, man, like I saw all Circle Jerks, all Madness. All I need is one more push to get me to go. And they're just not giving it, man. It's like the club shows are like really weak, like really weak. Like there's nothing there yet. It's interesting, like at all. The most interesting thing is Bad Manners. But am I going to fly cross country to see Bad Manners? You know, I mean, I'd like to see Madness and Circle Jerks, but and the worst part, well, not the worst part, but I was hoping it, you know, Circle Jerks would be Friday and Madness would be Saturday, so I could leave on Sunday. But they spaced them out.
They don't even start till Saturday.
Yeah, man, it's like, oh yeah, it's right. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It actually starts on Thursday now, I think, but like the smaller shows. But I mean, the club shows are just so like, and people on the internet, people are like, oh my god, this lineup's amazing, and I'm like the club shows are amazing, and I'm like, there's like nothing for me here, you know. Do you feel that way?
No, I think it seems pretty solid all the way.
Really?
I mean, you had some stuff going on last year, John, as far as personal connections, and don't let that fog your make the lineup maybe better than it was. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't great because it was a ton of bands, but there's a ton of bands this year. I mean, there's tons of stuff. Maybe not all at the top of the lineup, but there's. I mean, let's face it. Punk Rock Bowling is sort of the American Rebellion. It is the orthodox punk festival.
I would disagree in that the difference is there's more younger bands.
But if you look through the Rebellion lineup, it's not all, you know, there's some newer bands.
True. But man, club shows like Hepcat, I mean, that's cool. Doom, that's cool. Restarts, I don't care about it at all. Guttermouth, I don't care about it at all. English being Scatterlights, that's kind of cool. But the Scatterlights isn't even really the Scatterlights, it's just a bunch of guys, you know.
Neither's English Beat.
Yeah, true. Riverboat Gamblers, you know, Dr. No, that's cool, but I'm not gonna fly across country to see Dr. No. Andrew WK, that's cool, but I've seen Andrew WK. Mariachi El Bronx, I don't really care at all. Professionals, I don't really care at all because Steve Jones isn't in the group. MDC,
really? Who's playing guitar?
The professional was Steve Jones and some other guy. Steve Jones is not in the professionals anymore.
Well, it was Steve Jones and it was the drummer for the Pistols, right?
Paul Cook. He's not in it anymore either. There's no Sex Pistols anymore.
Because it was like half Sex Pistols, half Generation X, or half Sham 69 or something. It was, the original lineup was, I don't know.
Well, anyway, the point being is there's no Sex Pistols in the Professionals. MDC, that's cool, but I've seen MDC a bunch of times.
But they're playing with GBH, right?
No, they're not at the not at this. They're going on tour with GBH, which will be awesome. MDC.
Yeah, I gotta try to see that, man. That's definitely up there on my list.
Oh man, yeah, I think it hits the
geriatric sweet spot.
I think they've announced all the club shows, and that's it.
Wow. No, I saw that there was. I'm in this closed group, this punk rock bowling group.
I'm in that too, but
they said there was eight more. They said there was going to be eight more.
I don't know. Man. I'm on the Punk Rock Bowling website. They usually have like question marks up for stuff I haven't announced. There's no more question marks.
Oh, all right.
And so I'm saying, like, I don't know, boys. I mean, I'm just not thrilled by this at all.
I'm not going to make it, John. So if that matters. I'm gonna make up for it by Adam and I going to some kind of an epic show the random Thursday night that he's passing through Grand Rapids.
I mean, if I go, see, like, I'll just go for the Circle Jerks, which is the last thing. And then I'll skip the next day, and I'll go see Madness.
If I fly out, I'm going to try to go see every single thing.
But Tom, when you sit through bands you don't care about, it's brutal. You know
what that's life, John. That's being an adult, sitting through bands you don't care about. Sometimes you got to sit through, you know, something to get to something. I don't know.
Adam, Punk Rock Bowling, are you let down, or you think it's the greatest thing ever?
I haven't put more than one moment of thought towards it this year, and certainly not tonight. So I don't know. it is not a thing that is factored into my thinking. I remember seeing initially the lineup of it, and it flittered out my head. So anyway, back to the thing that I interrupted on there. Adam might be from
Canada, but his heart is in neutral Switzerland.
Mm. So all right, the final festival before we move on and play a piece of music here. Pooza has announced their 10th. Anniversary lineup. So this is going on May 15th, 16th, 17th in downtown Montreal. That would be the May 2-4 weekend, I believe, up here in Canada. And I'll go off some of the big font here. Propagandhi and Millencolin from Propagandhi from Winnipeg, Millencolin from Sweden are going to be headlining this thing. Good Riddance, The Agrolites, Wilhelm Scream, Cancer Bats, Tim Barry of Avail, Red City Radio, The Dwarves, Mustard Plug, Clowns, Belvedere, Radkey, Chicks Dig It, Dilly Dally, Dead Fucking Last. There's about 200 bands that are playing this thing all in, so the fonts get very small.
It's essentially Fest North.
It's the same
level of bands, and they kind of set up the same way, right?
There's a very telling, like, you know, like Fest was tweeting out, you know, reaction emojis to this lineup when Pooza announced it all there. So there's clearly some kinship between the two of them. So this sucker's been announced. I haven't been to a Pooza in 6 years, 7 years or something.
How far
like
is that from you, Adam?
Montreal is about 7 hours.
It's a big country you got there.
Yeah, things are far away. I try not to drive from Montreal to Montreal because it's like a super, super boring highway slog. And when I have gone in recent times, I'll take the train because it's like slightly more useful for I don't know what I can do in 7 hours. So I normally don't go to Pooza because it is on it's on May 2-4. It's on the Victoria Day long weekend in May in Canada, which again, if you're Mr. Dad and there's a long weekend where your kids are out of school because it's supposed to be a thing that you're doing stuff with your family, it's harder and harder to fuck off for 4 or 5 days and go to a different city and go to a music festival. So it generally hasn't.
You should take one of your kids.
Well, that's the thing. Is like now they're starting to get to the age where like some of them can go to stuff with me. I'm pretty tempted to go to Pooza this year. It's one of those festivals.
See, there's not enough in that lineup to get me very, very excited.
Dwarves, Tom. Dwarves.
Yeah,
DFL?
The Dwarves are going to drive to fucking Montreal to see the Dwarves, John.
I might.
It's one of those events Touché. that uh, the lineup does this sort of, it has two heads to it, where half of it are these, let's say, like, big crowd pleasing to the 90s skate punk scene bands. So, you know, your Propagandis, your Millen Collins, right? Your Mustard
Plugs. Those are pretty middle level headliners, really, aren't they?
No, but I mean, like, they appeal to the same crowd that's going to see, you know, the Dwarves and Good Riddance and Chicks Dig It. Like, they're all people that are our age. They're like mid 30s or a little bit later, yeah, or a little bit younger.
Like the fest,
right? But then, because this is a big punk festival that's put on by a bunch of Francophone guys that is in a Francophone speaking part of the world, are they like half those down level bands on this, like the small text bands, they're either bands from Quebec that are like these cool, scrappy garage punk bands that are coming up there, or they're all these bands that were legendary within those local scenes that they've convinced to reunite. And like this festival has that same sort of effect that you see like giant festivals do in the States, where it's never that they go and they convince some band anyone's heard of outside of, say, Montreal to reunite, but all these like scene bands within Montreal they would convince to reunite. So there's a band that is like four rows down from the top of this poster called Les Marmottes Appelletti, let's say. I don't know. I don't really speak French, right? Where, you know, they're as big as they're billed above the Dwarves, above Mustard Plug, above, you know, above any of those bands. So they must be someone, but, you know, fuck if I had ever heard of them before I really started looking into this. But like, they were within Quebec, like a pretty huge pop punk band, or let's just say like 90s skate punk band. And they were active for, you know, over at least a decade, from like 1994 till 2004. And then they broke up. So if you are from that part of Canada, from that like French speaking part of the world, like this is one of these bands that was like pretty big for a while that they've brought back. And I'm interested to go to Pooza and kind of like try to hang out at some of those shows, like maybe not compete with everyone in a giant line to go see Propagandi and Millen Collins, although I wouldn't mind seeing Propagandi play. But I want to go to one of these weird shows where just like a bunch of like French punkers just fucking going off because this was, you know, because they'll never get to see these bands again, and just kind of like fly on the wall, those things that interests me. It tickles some part of my brain right now. So I wouldn't mind going and hanging out and doing that kind of stuff, but who knows? It's a weird weekend.
I wouldn't mind going to see the Dwarves just beat the crap out of all the wimpy bands there. Be awesome. Hey, listen, is the age of the average fest attendee going up, or is fest maintaining the same age average for the people at the show?
I bet you guys
are like the target age for these things now.
I bet you there's a slow creep.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're worried about that.
Like, I bet you the age goes up, but slower than the actual passage age goes, of time.
Right. Is,
right. Which
it doesn't go a full year every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what I'm basing that on, but I think that it's, you know, they're still trying to attract a lot of the same people, but a lot of those people start to get more like, you know, wrapped up in their stupid life commitments, where, you know, flying to Florida for a weekend might not work anymore.
See, okay, so Fest is at about, what, 17 years or something like that?
It's 1 year less or 1 year more than the current year.
I think it's 15 or 17 years.
No, I think it's Fest 19 this year, Tom.
Okay. So, yeah, that crowd is in its late 30s now.
Fest 19, Tom. Fest 19.
I would like to go to that. I think it would be fun. And I'm sure Pooza Fest would be fun. I kind of like the idea of running around from club to club. But I don't know if I could do it for 3 days anymore.
I would infinitely.
And it doesn't cater to my taste. Punk rock bowling more caters to my taste because I'm older.
This is an interesting question here. And I don't know if we've ever posed this to the group to discuss. If you were given the choice of you know, flitter from bar to bar, from small stage to C bands, or to go be in a festival field. What works for you? And I feel that, like, my answer to that is, and this is partly just because, like, in my head, festival field is Warped Tour. Like, I've not gone to a lot of festivals that are outside of that were in that kind of setting. I would pick these, like, go from club to club, you know, go from this bar to that bar kind of shows in almost every case, even though I know, yes, it probably means that I miss some band because I've got to pick, you know, which bar I'm going to go sit in,
as opposed to one big outdoor stage where you can see everything.
But I, you know what, I,
Adam, I agree 100%. Bands are supposed to be seen in the dark, in a bar, not in the middle of a freaking cornfield at 4 o'clock in the afternoon with the sun beating down on you. That's just how it is. I'm sure you've gone to those shows during the day at some dive bar. I know I have many times where you, like, walk out between bands and the sun just blinds you and you're, like, half drunk and you're just walking out. There's something magical about that too. So no, bands should be seen in the dark in bars.
That's partly why I really liked the vibe around the Bose Oktoberfest this year, is because even though it is outside with, like, a band shell, it's in, like, this tiny ass, like, where all the punk bands play, is in this tiny ass little band shell that's sort of, like, tucked over in the corner that doesn't really interact with, like, the main festival one. And the amount of people standing around in the middle of the afternoon watching this or that random punk band can, you know, sometimes number in, like the 20 or 30 or 40 people that are really over there. So it never feels like you're, yeah, in one of those massive ass crowds. And just like, I can't do the crowd thing. I just doesn't.
I went to the last two Warped Tours, with my daughter, who was high school age at the time. We went to Detroit and we went to Chicago, and the Detroit one was
you Warped Tours the same year, Tom?
No, 2 and 2 years.
Oh,
so the last year was their big final touring year. Was just awful. I mean, if I tell you there was no bands I wanted to see. There was no bands I wanted to see. I mean, when the Interrupters and Bowling for Soup are the best bands on that, you know, it was pretty slim pickings. But the Detroit show, that was the year they tried to do, like, the throwback thing to appeal to people who had gone to the early ones. Because I actually went to the first, either went to the second and third year or the first and second year, and then didn't go for like 20 years. And then went to the last two. But they had, like, this throwback stage, which had Adolescence and Valiant Thor and Municipal Waste and Sick of It All, and it was, and Suicide Machines, and it was just this amazing, honestly, a great, amazing stage where we almost stayed by the stage almost all day, and there was maybe a couple hundred people. There was no, it was the same thing. It was just, it wasn't, everybody was watching Beartooth or
The Day We Remember.
What other band? God awful thing was playing over. No, that's a real band. But yeah, it was bizarre. But yeah, it is amazing. I mean, and it's just, it speaks to my taste more than anything else, or the fact that people my age don't go to shows anymore. They just don't draw. The bands I like just don't draw, you know? Sad but true. That's why I have to go to Chicago, Detroit to see these shows, because they can't draw in smaller secondary markets that I live in. I'm feeling very sad right now.
Yeah.
Not really.
You should. All right. So that was a bunch of festivals and a bunch of meandering segues, yes, into things that were not.
The weekly news is overrated, Adam. Rambling, underrated.
I mean, hey, I like the rambling. I'm just worried that there's, like, certain points where people, like, turn this show off and just throw their phone in the field. So anyways.
That's their loss.
You or me, Tom, want to play a piece of music before we.
Why don't you go ahead, since I haven't thought about it one bit.
Okay. All right. So there.
Anybody pick something up?
Okay, here. This is a weird band. Let's play this. I think this is super. So there's a band that is from Ottawa, which is where, like, 95% of the bands I talk about come from. They're kind of like a psyche surf flavored punk trio. They're called The Thrill. They used to be called The Shame several years ago, and they changed their name for some reason. But they're called The Thrill now. They had a self-titled EP that just came out. It is super weird. The vocalist guitarist, Mikey Power, has a just has this like little bit of like an otherworldly wild man kind of quality to his voice, and it makes it super fun. So this is a song called Retire off the recent EP by The Thrill. And it's one of those great songs that is super self-referential, and the band is screaming their own name as part of the song. Back. That was a thrill. Well, a couple follow-up stories before we wrap it up here tonight. A couple things John wanted to revisit. So John, you drive right now because I don't know what the intent is here.
Did you and Tom watch the rudimentary peni video?
The video, this is the video that we talked about last week, in case anyone's forgot, in which Nick Blinko wins an award at a an art thing.
So it's like literally like a 30-second video.
Did you watch it? Video.
I did.
Yes.
I love his acceptance speech. It's top notch.
I'm glad you guys watch this. Isn't Nick Blinko just perfect? Like, he's just like, he's so weird, but he's so perfectly weird, and he's not too weird, and he's aware that he's weird, but he's not like playing to it or against it. He's just the point being is people talk about, you know, I don't know, gutter mouth or Green Day.
Really, John? Really? Are people talking about Guttermouth, John?
I meant to say Lagwagon, honestly, not Guttermouth. Lagwagon. But, I mean, Rudimentary Peni just disintegrates all those bands. And in a way, it's a crime that Rudimentary Peni is not that's all we're talking about. But on the other hand, maybe that's one of the things that makes him so special, is that most people don't get them, and that Nick Blinko is a total weirdo and is a magical creature. I mean, I love this video so much.
It is pretty funny. And the fact that it's so short makes it, and I love the fact that all these like pretty serious looking people in suits just sort of are amused by him.
Well, indeed.
And he seems like sort of a potentially dangerous vagrant.
And he's wearing like
a black t-shirt,
like fishing boots. You know what I mean? Or something, you know, like,
he's, I didn't even notice that, but he's wearing like a black t-shirt. Everybody else is wearing suits, you know?
And I love, he like clasps his arms behind his back, like he's Patton or something. And you think he's going to say anything just super like,
and he says like a total of like 15 words, maybe.
He's like, my psychiatrist says I'm naive. I'm glad to have a second opinion. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, like the first words of Nick Blanco publicly in like literally like 25 years. Oh man, this is great. I'm glad Nick Blanco is doing well. That's great.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know if we can get any more airtime out of a 28-second video. So we will.
I can talk about it all day, Adam.
I know you can, but that you got to make another podcast for that, John. Why do you want to revisit this second story?
Oh, so Rage Against the Machine is going on tour. Run the Jewels is opening. Sounds pretty cool. Was the Run the Jewels part? Rage Against the Machine, I used to think they were pretty cool, and now they just sound kind of tame to me. However, due to the Ticketnet, Rage Against the Machine is going on tour. It is a Live Nation tour. They are playing exclusively Live Nation venues. The only place you get tickets is Live Nation ticket outlets or Live Nation secondary markets. Rage Against the Machine, they actually did a post where they admitted that they're selling tickets directly to secondary markets for some reason. But the other thing is, due to Ticketmaster's new thing from the past couple years, quote, surge pricing, some Rage Against the Machine lawn tickets in some areas were starting at $600. The cheapest ticket anywhere was $150. And people would go, oh, I only spent $150 on tickets. I'm not beating down a Rage Against the Machine because it's kind of easy to beat down a Rage Against the Machine, but you can't be the anti-capitalist band if you are literally using the biggest capitalist entertainment network in North America and gouging insane prices out of people. I mean, is there any way to justify? I saw some people on the network trying to justify it, and even Rage is trying to justify it on their Facebook. They're like, well, we're going to donate a portion of the 10% ticket sales that we sell to secondary market to some charity, which is nice, you know. But, I mean, is there any way to justify this at all? I mean, if you just say, well, they're just entertainment, well, okay, that justifies it. They're just another pop group. But is there any way to justify this as a band that really has any political conviction whatsoever? And I don't mean that as an attack. I mean that as a genuine question. Is there any way to redeem Rage Against the Machine charging $600 for tickets?
It's, you know, it's the same thing. You know, remember 20 years ago when Pearl Jam went against Ticketmaster, 25 years ago maybe. These people are bastards. We don't want to deal with them anymore. But you can't. You can't fight them. It's like the old saying, you can't fight City Hall. If you want to do a massive tour, you cannot do it without dealing with Live Nation and Ticketmaster.
I can name one person that is fighting and winning.
Is it John Gentile Productions?
No. It's Ian MacKay. Crikey is going – listen,
no.
Ian MacKay
– yeah, but nobody gives a crap about Crikey.
No. But see, that's the point. Ian MacKay could say, Fugazi's back together, Live Nation, let's charge $200 a ticket. I mean, Fugazi could probably rival Misfits or come close. True?
No way. No way.
Oh, I think so.
They're more like a Jawbreaker level.
No, Fugazi, no.
Yeah, you're
Adam Tidesider.
I'm going with Resi's
appeal.
So anyways, Ian MacKay could. He really, could do that.
So Misfits are playing hockey rinks, playing for 15,000 people. You think Fugazi Reunion is going to do that? Fugazi Reunion is a theater tour.
No, I don't think so. I think for the first.
So my really subtle down the middle answer on this is that I think they're bigger than Tom thinks. I think they're maybe less big than John thinks.
Okay. Do we all agree that?
Typical Adam answer.
Do we all agree that if Coachella called up Ian and said, Ian, we want Fugazi to unite for Coachella, we'll give you $1 million? That could happen, right?
It could happen. I don't think they would do it, but I don't think they.
No. I'm saying that's about the price range that would hit at, right?
You think they would have to give them that much money? I don't know.
I think so, sure. So anyways,
Rage Against the Machine, this reunion, they're probably looking at $30 to $50 million.
No, they're looking more than that. I mean, the Rolling Stones. Yeah, I mean, their ticket prices are three times expensive Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones could be $120 million.
The real issue here to me is this surge pricing. So,
the ticket price.
The band's money is not going up because of surge ticket pricing, I don't believe, unless they got some special arrangement.
Tom, let me finish my thing and you can talk about Stars pricing. The point being is Kroenke is literally playing a bookstore tomorrow for like $5. And check this out.
Like five people for $5.
Yeah. So they're doing D.C., Harrisburg, and like New York. And between Harrisburg and New York, there's a day off. And I reached out. I emailed Ian. I said, oh, Ian, I'm sure you know people in Philadelphia, but if you want to do one and you don't have anybody there, I can do it for you. And he wrote back, and he was very polite. It was basically, oh, thanks for reaching out. We're not going to do Philadelphia right now, but hey, thanks for reaching out. It was basically, I got people, and if I do Philadelphia, I don't need you, but I'm trying to be polite. The point being is Ian MacKay, almost as legendary as Punk gets, he's writing back to me, just some jerk that he doesn't even know that's throwing 150 person shows, you know. Meanwhile, Rage is doing, you know, $600 tickets. And so it can be done. The question is, do you want millions and millions and millions of dollars? So no, you can't make millions and millions and millions of dollars outside of the Ticketmaster system. But the question is, are you willing to sell out and I hate to use the word sell out, but are you willing to sell out and you know, work with these people to make millions and millions, millions of dollars? Or do you decide, I'm not going to make millions and millions of dollars, and I'm going to play a bookstore in Harrisburg on Thursday and make $65, you know?
But Ian MacKay is in a unique position in that he still controls the Discord catalog and that slowly but surely continuously sells.
So he's
economically independent. I'm not saying he's rich, but he's economically independent.
So you're saying Rage Against the Machine is so broke they need the money? That's
I have no idea what their situation is.
I can guarantee the Rage Against the Machine guys are way richer than Ian MacKay.
I assume that Tom Morello is doing okay. I assume, I don't know. You know, we just talked to a guy who wrote a song that, and I don't want to get into it too great a length, but sold a song to The Offspring on an album that sold a huge amount of copies. And I know that you can make good. There's a lot of money to be made in publishing and whatever. I assume Rage is probably doing okay.
Right. So the point being is Ian's not quite as unique as people might think he is, you know.
Well, but he's more unique than the average, you know, than, you know, the guy from Rudimentary Peni.
But I don't see Nick Blinko, you know, dancing with Philip Anschultz. You know, I see Rage Against the Machine dancing with Philip Anschultz.
I don't think Rudimentary Peni is filling any sort of arena. So it's apples and oranges, you know.
But
those Che Guevara t-shirts don't print themselves.
I know that's what I'm saying is, what does that say about Rage Against the Machine? Or
what we always knew about Rage Against the Machine when they signed Epic Records in 1990 something.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I'm sorry. Most of us could see through that shit back then. I know they're a formative band for a lot of people, and I really don't have anything against Rage Against the Machine. I think the first album is unique enough, at least to the average suburban white kid, that it definitely has something. I think it kind of each one after that was a little less so. But I'm really not anti Rage Against the Machine. But the fact of the matter is, you can't. I mean, the irony of the always trying to bring the anti-capitalist message by using the most capitalist machine, that was always the case with them. And, well, we're on a bigger label, we'll get it out to more people. That's bullshit. That's a, I don't want to have to worry about money bullshit argument, you know? Boy, I'm on fire tonight, guys. Angry.
I feel like the rest of the world cares about this Rage Tour way more than I do. And
I'm with you. No, it's me and you, Adam. Me and you, well, and
like,
John.
I don't know if it's just that I'm so far out from what's normal as far as like a person that goes to see, you know, quote unquote concerts, or if it's just that I'm just like tired and jaded and checked out, and I don't care. Like I don't know what it is. Like
little of A, little of B. Like, plus the fact that Run the Jewels is opening, and if they had Limp Bizkit opening, which is really their true peers, then you would have had to go, right?
Well, it's weird because like I all of a sudden saw all these people that I consider super engaged in the independent music world. That they are on paper more engaged than I am. They are putting on shows and, you know, making things happen. Not like I'm just some asshole on the internet. These people are actually like make things happen. And they've all spent the past like 2 weeks talking about their adventures in acquiring Rage Against the Machine tickets on Facebook. And I'm just like, really?
Don't sell yourself short, Adam. You're an exception asshole on the internet.
I'm not bad. I'm not bad at that. But just like, but I didn't look at this for more than like 3 seconds before deciding that like, oh, okay. Like that's not a thing. It's not a thing I need to do. Like if I want to go scratch the itch of see a band play music, I can go do that. And it'll cost me between $5 and $20 plus the cost of a beer somewhere. And I'll leave satisfied. And that's sort of like as much thought as I put into it. I should have as much nostalgic desire for seeing Rage Against the Machine as anyone that grew up in that era. Like they were a band I listened to. They're a band I saw live. They're a band I owned all their shit. Like I was a legit fan. They didn't even do anything to necessarily piss me off. It's not like they're some band that I like regret listening to. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But just like I don't know, like the idea that it costs any amount of money to go see them is just like okay, you guys have fun. I don't know. I think I'm dead. I'm dead. I'm dead inside. John, am I dead?
Rudimentary Peanut, I think so. You know, was it a collection of empty cells? We are the crumbling wall and armored prison. There you go.
Anyway, they're playing Detroit on like a Tuesday night, which was a big thing for me. I'm not going to go to Detroit on a Tuesday night. And they actually added a second show. So they're in Detroit, they are going to sell approximately 36,000 tickets.
Rally around the family.
Do the math.
With a pocket full of shell.
Adam was so into them, he even liked their cover of The Ghost of Tom Joad. I don't hear denial.
One last thing, Adam, I just want to mention it, and then maybe we can wrap this up. The Streetwalking Cheetahs have released a video. Who are the Streetwalking Cheetahs? The Streetwalking Cheetahs are a relatively unknown LA glam punk band. Notably, their guitar player is Bruce Duff. Who's Bruce Duff? He was in Bug Lamp with Keith Morse. He was in ADZ, which was a successor band to the Adolescents, and he's a cool guy. And I just wanted to highlight this because they reached out to us. They asked us to premiere the track, and we did. And I got to say, boys, this track has got kind of like a Cheap Trick vibe, but I dug this song. I think it's great. So I think all the listeners should go check out the single of the Streetwalking Cheetahs. And I don't remember the name. Oh, it's like We Are the Ones That We've Been Waiting For. I dug this song.
I hate almost everything, and I thought this song was pretty all right.
It had a nice optimism to it, I thought.
It's definitely a new wavy kind of song. Yeah. I actually want to get the 7-inch because that song on the B-side is some ridiculous title that I want to hear. Anyway,
well,
it was cool. I like it. Plus, right, it was, so, I mean, they're named after a Stooges song or a Stooges lyric, so I like that.
That's the thing you can find on punknews.org, which is a website. Podcast.punknews.org is an email address. That's how you you send us mail. We got anything else we want to talk about, or we going to bed?
Can I, I'm still doing the double duty podcasting thing, guys, obviously.
Yes.
I'm doing this, and I'm doing the Punk Till I Die podcast. We are at episode number – we just did number 18. But I want to give a quick plug for number 17 because it was so much fun. We had a guy on – Ellie, don't know by name, but he fronted a band called The Digits. And one of his big claims to fame is he actually wrote the song the Digits song Killboy Powerhead, which the Offspring put on their Smash album. And we were kind of talking about the financial independence thing. So every time Offspring sold a copy of Smash, he got 6.5 cents for this song. And that album sold 14 million copies. But anyway, it's a really fascinating listen. If you haven't been able to check out the Punk Till I Die podcast yet, you got to check it out. So that's my commercial. Sorry, guys. But anyway, other than that, I'm good.
Tom's a capitalist.